The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. I am Alan Chartok. Join us today, and we're lucky to have him, as State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from New York's 39th Senate District, which includes Newburgh. Senator Skoufis is chair of the Senate Investigations Committee. Welcome back, Senator.
Pleasure to be back.
So you, when you came on, you caught my eye, that's for sure, because you announced that you're going to be the chairman of, they announced you were going to be the chairman of the Senate Investigations Committee, mm-hmm. and you would say you're going wherever you have to go. Mm-hmm. Has that actually happened? Have you been able to go where you wanted to go, or do you get reined in by the governor, by Andrea Stewart Cousins, and by other powers?
Well, so in the lead up to the appointment and in the early days, you know, I made it clear to everybody that especially since this was a new endeavor, institutionally speaking, that it was important, as I put it back then, to hit singles and doubles out of the gate. And, you know, we've got three investigations ongoing so far. I think one or two of them are going to be wrapping up soon. And at that point, you know, we're establishing credibility. But to answer your latter question, no, we haven't been reined in. I'm working closely with the majority leader, and she's been supportive of any investigation that I've come to her with. But make no mistake, I and my team, we are planning a number of additional investigations that, you know, let's say maybe more politically sensitive.
So let's make some news. What are they?
I'll make some news when we're ready to take these on. Right now, we're in the planning stages.
There's an insidious nature, I suspect, of money being involved in politics. We have relationships between lobbyists and the governor, lobbyists and legislators. And we heard, as we speak in the press this morning, Governor Cuomo has announced he doesn't even know when he's speaking to a lobbyist. Does that pass the smell test to you?
I can only tell you that I know when I'm speaking to a lobbyist. But to your broader point, yes, you know, certainly money has this corrosive influence, particularly here in New York, where, you know, if you're a state Senate candidate, the contribution limits are astonishingly about $11,000 for a general election. You run for Congress, it's $2,700, about a quarter of a state Senate race. So there's way too much money in politics. You know, we in the Senate majority, we supported public financing. We got some watered down sort of mishigas out of the budget on that issue. But we clearly have a lot more to do on that item.
So this is going to take some real doing, not only because every legislator wants the potential to get some money. And if you really start to clamp down on this, there's a problem, isn't there?
I don't think so, because if you're clamping down on legislators receiving campaign contributions, that also means you're clamping down on an opponent's ability to receive campaign contributions, right? And, you know, in addition to lowering limits and doing what we're talking about here, we ought to be also empowering, you know, small donors. And that's why, you know, I've supported public financing.
Well, I'm all for public financing, too, and I think that's a great idea, but it's not happening yet.
It's not, and that's a shame.
There's got to be a reason, right?
Look, you know, I can only tell you that during the budget, the Senate majority's position was very clear. I don't know that, you know, the other stakeholders, the other folks in the room, their positions were very clear.
So let's face it. We know what's going to happen. If there's public financing, Harry the bartender is going to come out and run against some of the guys who are in office already. They don't want that.
Maybe some people don't want that. I think that's fine. Look, you know, I, in fact, in my first assembly race, I ran against a mayor who was a bartender, literally. So, you know, that's what democracy is supposed to be about. Anyone in this great country is supposed to be able to run for any office they want. And in New York, it's difficult, if not impossible, under certain circumstances where, you know, you've got incumbents starting out of the gate with hundreds of thousands of dollars in their campaign account.
Let's talk about voting, Senator Skoufis. The question I would have for you is, because it's on everybody's lips right now, now, both federally and statewide. Mm-hmm. Should people who are incarcerated be allowed to vote?
I don't believe so. No. I know Senator Sanders came out with that position. I disagree with him.
Why?
You know, look, if you're a felon and you're in jail, you sacrifice some rights by breaking the law and, you know, to such a degree. And, you know, when you've served your time and, you know, you're back in society, then you have an ability to regain those rights. But while you're in jail, you do sacrifice some rights.
But when you get out, you should be allowed to
And
vote.
Let's be clear, you know, you have some small rural towns in New York State, you know, where if incarcerated felons were able to vote, they can take over local elections. You know, you might have a felon who becomes a mayor, quite frankly. You know, if suddenly, you know, 1,000 inmates are able to vote in a town or a village of, 500 people, let's say.
I have to confess, you stumped me there. I had never thought of that, the idea that the felons in the prison would vote for the mayor outside the prison.
They could vote there.
And take over the town, yeah. Interesting. So measles, let's talk measles if we can. This is very serious. I just got a very angry letter from a lady who is furious with me because my position is everybody should be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So she disagrees, obviously, and thinks it goes back to the trope about the autism and the rest. Where are you?
I represent part of Rockland County.
Which, just to be clear, have an awful lot of concentrated Orthodox Jewish communities.
And along with Brooklyn is the epicenter of this measles epidemic now.
Right.
And so this is an issue that's front and center for me. I share your view. You know, in fact, look, I'm a pretty tolerant legislator in terms of understanding and appreciating opposing viewpoints. But when it comes to vaccines, I really don't have much tolerance because the science is very clear. You know, at a press conference a couple of days ago, I made the point, you know, I grew up in elementary school and in middle school playing a game called Oregon Trail. And in this game, you would take a caravan out west, but along the way, you'd face all these challenges, including contracting sometimes diseases. And your caravan could contract smallpox, dysentery, measles. And it is astonishing to me that in 2019, as a New York State legislator, I would never have fathomed before this outbreak occurred that I would be here talking about measles and what to do about it in New York State. And so I strongly believe that we ought to do away with the so-called religious exemption that is used and abused to circumvent vaccines. And look, you know, there are legitimate medical reasons, medical exemptions. You know, if someone has cancer and has chemotherapy, you have a very poor immune system, you may not be able to receive vaccines. But make no mistake that there is not one single religious institution. I don't care if you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or a Scientologist. None of these organizations, institutions, you know, view vaccines poorly. You know, they don't denounce vaccines. None of them. Not one. So why are we as a state pretending as if there are any religions out there that denounce vaccines and we have this religious exemption? We should do away with it. There are hundreds of individuals who are who have contracted measles in Rockland County. And if you think it's bad now, wait for a couple of months when everyone's on summer break and they're traveling all around the state and all around the country. And you're going to have, you know, individuals with measles all over, possibly spreading this disease around New York State.
So we do know that the reality is that some groups vote as a bloc and are often sort of directed to vote in a particular way. It sounds to me like you might be courting some electoral trouble. It shows you to have some guts. Do you lie awake at night worrying about this?
I don't. And look, this issue isn't clear cut. Even I know you're referencing the ultra-Orthodox block vote, of which I represent Curious Joel. It's interesting. Even in the Hasidic community, there are some Hasidic communities like Curious Joel, actually, that are by and large immunized. Many in Rockland County are not, as we all have come to learn. And so, but look, you know, I won the last election without the support of the village of Curious Joel. And so, this is very important public policy, and it should be regardless of the politics.
I got it. Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about tax returns. President Donald Trump has declined to release his federal tax returns, but New York legislators, like you, are pushing a bill aimed at enabling the release of state returns to Congress moved out of the state Senate's Budget and Revenue Committee. That's the beginning of the question. I know it's complicated. I'm sorry. But also, there are those who think it'll never make it out of the legislature because of political concerns. I wonder if you could speak to that.
I'm optimistic that bill is going to pass. I support it. And to be clear, the bill states that if a congressional investigation and inquiry requests the state tax returns from New York, that we would comply. It's actually very simple. We don't, you know, by virtue of passing this bill, we don't, as a state, release the tax returns. We're just saying we would comply with an investigation, which I think we should be doing anyway, bill or no bill. But I do believe, I'm hopeful this legislation will pass. And look, you know, there's tremendous precedent. Every presidential candidate for decades has released their taxes, except for the current president. But look, this is obviously the subject of an investigation right now. And this bill just says we would comply with that investigation.
So why shouldn't state tax returns from Trump, why don't you just pass a bill saying if somebody asks for it, he has to give it?
So there are a number of iterations of this issue legislated. I think there are three or four bills that speak to this issue. And, you know, we conferenced the fundamental issue a couple of weeks ago.
Conference meaning that your group got, the Democrats got together and discussed it.
Yes. Okay. And this was the bill that we settled on as most appropriate to move forward with.
Is it the chicken way out?
I don't think so. You know, it accomplishes what I think, you know, people who are interested in the tax returns are seeking to accomplish. But we felt this was the most appropriate way to move forward. You know, we know this is the subject of an investigation. Let's make sure we comply with it.
And what about the other house?
I'm personally not sure. You know, I know that there is significant support for accomplishing the release of the tax returns in the assembly. So I suspect that we're going to be able to come to common ground on this.
Are you embarrassed that Trump is a New Yorker?
I'm embarrassed by how the current president is treating New York, whether it be the SALT issue that had a devastating impact on the suburbs, some of which I represent, or the Gateway Project, which is the single most important infrastructure project in the entire country, and his refusal to support it. You know, so I've been embarrassed by some of the actions and inactions that have been taken by the administration.
Now, James Skoufis, Senator, let me follow along on that one. So Trump is now saying that the deduction of state and local taxes didn't have to go through if the Democrats had just fought harder to prevent that from happening. Seems to me like a bunch of BS, but I'm wondering whether you're insulted by that.
Yeah. Well, you're not missing anything there, and quite frankly, it's laughable. I mean, the federal tax reforms or so-called reforms were passed under complete Republican control in the House and the Senate, and you know, Democrats, I think every single Democrat, if I'm not mistaken, voted against that legislation. So to suggest, oh, if they'd only fought harder while they were in the minority, by the way, is a bunch of poppycock.
And the governor, who sometimes we disagree with, has been yelling about that as his number one issue from day one. I've had him on the air so many times talking about that. It's hard to believe he could have fought any harder.
Yeah, on this issue, I certainly agree with the governor. You know, it's very clear that this provision of the tax reform bill was aimed at states like New York. And, you know, the governor on this issue responded appropriately.
Let's talk a little bit about Tish James, the attorney general. She's suing the National Rifle Association. She's suing a lot of people, but she's suing the National Rifle Association. And the question to many people is, since it's a political organization, should it have tax-exempt status?
That's a great question, and I suspect that she's going to be looking at just that. Obviously, the NRA was entangled with Russian interests. You know, we found that out over the past year or so, and they had their convention and a lot of infighting over just this issue a number of days ago. And, you know, I have faith that the attorney general is going to get to the bottom of whether the NRA engaged in, you know, any illegal activity as a not-for-profit organization.
Now, one of the ways you're figuring out what to investigate as chairman of the investigating committee is you have a tips line.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, we've already received many, many emails. Some are, you know, people just expressing frustration and,
sure,
you know, whatnot. But we've received a number of legitimate tips that we're
acting on.
Anybody
call in and say, can you investigate my brother-in-law?
Not that, but you're not too far off from a couple of the emails we've gotten. But it is investigations@nysenate.gov if folks have tips. And look, this is particularly important. We set this up because we need an outlet for whistleblowers to be able to reach us, perhaps anonymously if they so choose, and let us know whether it's in an agency or whatnot, if there's impropriety going on.
So if somebody sees a state car parked outside somebody's house, would that be something you'd want to hear about?
I don't know that that in and of itself is improper. Maybe it's interesting, depending on whose house it is in front of. But we do think that it's important. We've heard from a number of people who have given us important information that we're acting on.
Do you speed in your car?
I guess occasionally a few miles per hour above the limit, but yeah. I think most people do. Yeah.
Well, because I get a lot of calls here about our investigating guys who go, state legislators who go by them at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, that I do not go that fast. You know, if it's a 65 in the thruway, maybe I go 70, 75.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the idea about transparency. You have put some bills forward. We know that there's been some stuff that has happened to the governor and to some of the people around the governor, which might have been avoided. I'm thinking about Joe Prococo and others. Had we had more transparency? Had we been able to look into this a little bit? Could you talk to that?
Sure. And I know we spoke a little bit about this the last time I was on the show. And,
did you get into trouble for saying that?
I don't think so. You know, I think maybe it ruffled some feathers, but I didn't get into so-called trouble. But, you know, we specifically talked about returning the comptroller's ability to sort of pre-audit these contracts.
Yes.
And it's no surprise to me, as the governor saw momentum building around this issue, he actually embraced it and put it in his executive budget. And that was one of the positive items in the budget. We returned a lot of that power to the comptroller. We need to do more. You know, we passed a bill that would prohibit a lot of these contractors from making campaign contributions at the time that they're applying for the contract. I believe that bill needs to go a step further. You look at, for example, some companies, especially power plant companies, for example, that are applying for permits at various state agencies. Unfortunately, that bill that we passed in the Senate, that I hope the Assembly will take up, does not cover instances like that. You look at CPV, for example, the power plant that Joe Prococo got tied up in the bribery scandal. And
Prococo, for those who aren't following all that closely, is in prison now, one of the closest aides to Governor Cuomo.
Yeah, and CPV, that power plant, while they were applying for permits, was contributing tens of thousands of dollars to the governor's reelection campaign account. So there's more work to do, is the long story short.
So you're a young man. How old are you?
I'm 31.
Yeah, I told you you were young. Your folks still alive?
My father is.
Yeah, does he ever say to you, hey, Jim, you know, careful now, you're fooling with some very powerful people.
My wife tells me that more than my father does, yeah. But look, you know, if anything were to ever happen to me, I think most people would be able to pinpoint, you know, or, you know, focus on one or two people who did it. So that provides some safety to me because everyone's going to know who did it. You know, but the kidding aside, you know, this is an important role that I have as chairman of investigations. And broadly speaking, you know, all of us in the state legislature have an important job representing hundreds of thousands of people each. And, you know, I believe it's incumbent upon us to act as a co-equal independent branch. And, you know, I know there's some frustration that boiled over from the budget process among some of my especially new colleagues in the Senate. And my hope is that, you know, we will exert ourselves more and better in the months ahead of the remainder of session.
So how are you getting along with Governor Cuomo? I mean, when you came in, you made a lot of headlines. You're going to go where you need to go. You'll investigate what you need to investigate. A lot of people thought, along with ideas about transparency, that there was going to be some ruffle feathers between the two of you. Mm-hmm. How has that played out?
Look, you know, I think the governor does not like when folks in his party, the Democratic Party, are vocal or opposed to anything he is trying to do. And, you know, there are different tactics that are employed. I think they've come to learn that, you know, I am who I am. And, you know, when I'm supportive of something he's doing, I'm supportive and I let people know. But when I'm opposed, I'm not quietly opposed. You know, if I feel strongly about an issue, I'm going to let people know.
I respect that.
Thank you. And, you know, I think my constituents respect that, most importantly. So, look, you know, I think that the governor's office knows that there's a working relationship to be had when there are issues we can agree on. And they know to expect opposition if they're going up against me on an issue that I care deeply about.
Were you a political science major?
I was, yeah. Bachelor's degree at George Washington University and master's at Columbia.
Wow. Okay, so PFOS, contamination? What's going on?
Remains a big problem in Newburgh, which I represent. You know, there's been a couple of steps forward. The Army Corps of Engineers is in the process of building what is now a second filtration plant up near the Air National Guard, where the source of this right. contamination was in Newburgh. And that said, from Stewart Airport, just recently, new contaminants via this firefighting foam was dumped into a contributory to Washington Lake, which a number of years ago was, before the contamination, the primary water source for the city of Newburgh. Fortunately, it has not been since then, but it remains a problem. There's legislation that actually bans PFOs in firefighting foam that I hope we take up to make sure this doesn't happen even yet again in Newburgh or anywhere else, but there needs to be accountability, and certainly there needs to be cleanup of the water in Newburgh.
James Kufis, some of your constituents in your senatorial district drive into New York every day, and we have this new congestion pricing thing going on. Where are you on that one?
So I have concerns with congestion pricing's double tolling. If New York City wants to do their own thing and, you know, accommodate the fact that west of Hudson, we have very poor public transit. We have a lot of drivers that head into Manhattan because there are so few trains, and they already pay $15 to get over the George Washington Bridge or the Lincoln Tunnel. You want to accommodate for that fact, then go for it. Do whatever you want with congestion pricing in New York City. But my problem will be if there is no accommodation, you're going to have folks potentially driving into the city for work every day who are going to pay just in tolls, never mind gas and everything else, upwards of $30
a day
to get into New York City for work. And that is outrageous. If you're paying $15 to go over the GWB or through the Lincoln Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel, and you know you travel a few blocks south from the GWB, it is outrageous to pay another $15+ toll. So, you know, obviously there's just been talk with New Jersey's governor in recent days. You know, there was an agreement, but, you know, I firmly believe that there needs to be protection against double tolling. But beyond that, so there was this broader MTA issue, right? We did something that's never been done before in this budget, which is we're going to have a forensic audit of the MTA, which is long overdue because we all know there's waste and there's fraud. And quite frankly, there might be criminal activity involved that, you know, sends people to jail with a forensic audit. And north of the city, we have traditionally received 8% of the five-year capital plan spending from the MTA. That's been forever, basically. Now we're going to get 10%. We're going to get a fairer share of the capital spending. That's good for east and west of Hudson. So yes, congestion pricing remains an open issue as they figure out the toll and any accommodations with double tolling. But on the broader MTA issues, there were a number of positives in the budget.
It's going to be a tough one for you, James Kufis, with your constituents probably calling you up and talking about this.
They have been, and they still are. And, you know, I'm telling them that we had a number of these wins on MTA issues, and I'm telling them that we live to fight another day on the double tolling item.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about marijuana. In my good state of Massachusetts, in my little town, we're about to have 5 pot shops.
Wow.
And that's a lot, 7,000 people. They're giving new meaning to the height of the, you know, high in the Berkshires. So my question to you is, are we going to have it in New York?
I think that there's political will to get recreational marijuana done before we leave for session. And
what seems to be the problem?
Well, you know, I think it is appropriate that it got pulled out of the budget because this is a very complex issue with significant ramifications beyond just legal or illegal. And to be able to, it's impossible to focus on this complex of an issue in the budget when you have a million other things that are being negotiated and discussed. And so, you know, I'm actually happy it got pulled out of the budget, and I'm optimistic it'll get done. Look, two, for example, details that I'm paying attention to that I care about on this issue are, one, home grows. Are we going to allow people to grow marijuana in their homes? I don't think we should. I spoke with the policy guy in the Colorado governor's office a number of months ago about marijuana, and he told me that their number one regret was allowing home grows in Colorado because it effectively created a black market that undermined the regulated, the taxed retail outlets. And look, if you live in an apartment building, now suddenly you're going to be growing marijuana and everyone's going to, you know, and the other units are going to be smelling marijuana. There's just a lot of problems with that detail. And then the second is, what do we do with the money? I believe that we, at least on the onset, We need to be dedicating significant revenue to the public safety issues that are going to come about from legalizing
marijuana.
One last
fast question, and it has to be fast because we're out of time, but when it came to the governor's pay raise, you went to the bathroom. You weren't around to do that. And when people would ask you, why did you didn't vote for him, you and another senator went to the men's room. You said, well, I just went to the bathroom.
Yeah, so, you know, most of my constituents and most folks could read between the lines, and that was a demonstration that I was not in favor of the governor's pay raise. Whether I'm there or not, you need 32 votes to pass a bill like that, and I was not going to be contributing a yes vote to that bill. And so, look, you know, most people understood it. There were a couple of reporters who, you know, put on their Sherlock Holmes hat and tried to get to the bottom of it, so to speak. But let's be clear, I was opposed to that pay raise.
And it was because?
Because, A, it was dropped on us in the legislature, I think, at about midnight with no advance warning, totally inappropriate. And something like that, you know, first of all, he has a very substantial salary. He's got a mansion that we give him as taxpayers. But the whole process stunk from top to bottom.
Always great to have a man I much admire, a young man, James Skofas, a state senator from Rockland and other places. And we are delighted to have you back again, and we hope you'll come back more.
I will. Thanks so much, Alan.